When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you as a father or as a brother or as a soldier disgrace yourself, you're not only disgracing yourself, you're disgracing everyone around you and everyone who comes after you. It's like my son, if I disgrace myself, my son will live with that.
Sure.
And that to me is worse, far worse than death.
Let's go.
Welcome to Citizen. We have a special guest today of SpartanForge.ai, Bill Thompson. Holly,
how was it? Good. How are you guys doing?
Thanks for coming to Austin.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get into what the fuck AI is or Spartan Forge, let's talk about you. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in northeastern North Dakota.
Oh, wow. Like near the
Canadian border, like 10 minutes.
Are you a spy? Canadian spy, maybe?
I mean, I lived in Canada for a couple of years.
What's your relationship with maple syrup and poutine and shit like that?
I enjoy it.
See. Call the cops. So isn't there a nuke base up there somewhere?
Yep. There's a there's a ton of nuclear silos. Most of them were decommissioned.
Minot or something like that?
Yeah, Minot, as the Air Force kids would say.
Yeah, my buddy was stationed up there for a while. He was like, yeah, join the Air Force because I thought it would be cool, and now I'm sitting up here.
Sorry. I apologize.
Well, that's what you get for joining in the intel field, I think. Right.
Probably.
You end up in a fucking place like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of a coin toss. So you grew up in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
So I assume you grew up hunting.
I mean, kind of culturally. I also grew up poor. So not poor. We didn't know we were poor. It's the right way to say it. I didn't have access to hunting was like, we're going to go out and kill something. You know, there's the rifle opener in North Dakota. It would be like the third week of November. Everyone would go hunt for 3 days, shoot something in a field. And that'd be the end of it. So I really didn't get into hunting until I joined the military, and my brother-in-law kind of introduced me to bow hunting, and that's really what got me into hunting was bow hunting.
I see. Well, what was it like growing up there? You know, I mean, it seems pretty austere.
Yeah, North Dakota, like, I love it. I own property there. I love going back. It's not some place where I could stay forever, but you either need to be a farmer, somebody who is in the support to farming industry, or a banker that supports farmers. That's like the three major. Like, if you're not a waitress that's serving farmers or a guy that's doing tractor sales to farmers, it's all farming. And it's why I joined the military. I don't have like a big hoorah patriotic story about why I joined the military. We can swear on here, right? I've heard swearing. I just needed to get the fuck out of North Dakota.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think that's what most people in North Dakota are trying to do.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, you'd be surprised. A lot of the people I went to high school with are still there.
Like a cult or something? What's going on?
It's weird. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, none of them like me, so it's not like I have to worry about... I was not a popular kid in school.
What do you think that is?
Mostly because I like to speak my mind. And, you know, I'm not very good at... I was just telling Danica about it earlier. Like, I'm always... Anytime I'm going to be in a long-term relationship, you know, business-wise with anyone, I will come off as like being disinterested or not caring or whatever. It's just because I'm not thinking about it. Like, I have to actively think about things like that in order to appear to care. And in high school, I really wanted to just, you know, cause trouble, talk, you know, make people laugh. And it just did, that was not the rest of the people that I grew up with.
There were more serious people.
Yeah, probably. More serious, took self serious. You know, they were also, you know, it's also in school. I think I probably had a chip on my shoulder too, just being, you know, my father died when I was five, not a sob story, but just the reality. Our farm kind of went under, went into town. Mom was a waitress. We didn't have a ton. So, you know, when you're a kid and kids care about, you know, clothes and friends and shit like that, my thing was just like, fuck it. I don't care about these people. I'm going to get out of here as quick as I can.
Yeah, that seems to have worked out for you, so that's good.
Somewhat, yeah.
So you joined the military like right out of high school then?
Right out of, like, as soon, The reason I went military intel originally, I went the douchebag route, which I maybe some could argue I'm still on. And I wanted to be an MP because I thought, oh, badge, gun, sounds like fun. And when I went there, being just like an idiot teenager, I think I was 16 when I was at the MEP station, I forgot my driver's license. And where I was at, where we were at, it was in Fargo, was like 3 hours away from where I grew up. And the recruiter's like, well, dipshit, you're going to have to come back next month when we do this with a driver's license if you want to be an MP, because they need to submit it as part of like your MEPS mm-hmm. packet. And I said, no, that won't scan. Like, I need to get out of here right now. So what other job do you have? So they, you know, were like, hey, you did pretty well on like your GT and shit. There's this intel job that we are, you know, we're trying to get filled. A guy's got to brief you in a skiff about it. Mm-hmm. So I started hearing the James Bond music and I was like, yeah, let me do that. And, I think my experience in the intel field was a little different than most people. For the first 6 years, I almost did no intel work, you know, working like in an S1 as an administrative guy, and then a motor pool. It wasn't until I was at like year 4 or 5 that I actually started doing the work, and it sucked. but I had this idea of what, you know, hearing that James Bond music, I had this idea of what I thought the job would be. And I actually got to do most of that job by the time I left the military, which I think is, I thought that was pretty awesome by the time I got out. Like we actually were at the same event the other day, and I don't remember who said it, but someone, when we were at that event Sunday morning at that church for, you know, the Independence Fund mm-hmm. stuff, someone had said, you know, basically they benefited from their military service. I also feel like I greatly benefited from my military service. Like and I feel bad saying this almost, because I have friends and people that I work with who pretty much gave it all, either, you know, got shipped home in a box or got gravely injured or whatever. And, you know, it's all been done on their backs with their blood. And I've done nothing but benefit from my service, which is a whole nother podcast. But
sure, yeah. What was your MOS?
Initially it was like a 98 Juliet.
What's that?
So that's not the moniker they use anymore. I think it's a 35 November and 35 Sierra now. But at that time it was a non-communications electronic intelligence analyst. A fancy way of saying a radar technician collecting and categorizing radar emanation.
Is this something you were interested in before, or was this kind of coincidence?
I mean, kind of. I did really poorly in school, and one of the things that I did on my own time was mess with like crystal controlled radios, building. I don't know if you remember this or not, but back in the day, you'd get these like book forms that teachers would send home with you, and you could get books. And then on the back, there'd be like
Scholastic.
Yeah, Scholastic stuff. Yeah, is, yeah, exactly. Well, on the back page, they'd always have like some hard good that you could order as well. And I'd always like getting these little radios that were back there, and building radios, like coiled radios, crystal controlled radios. That really interested me. I had no idea. If a teacher had told me in high school, hey, if you learn math and go and learn algebra, you can build radios to go and kill people with. I would have, when someone told me that in the Army, I dove right into it. Sure. Like, I learned insatiably. So my problem was, my teachers never had that conversation with me. I had a teacher who was a good friend of my dad's who would always pull me aside and be like, hey, your dad was an engineer. You show a lot of these things. If you just shut up in class and apply yourself, like when I see you apply yourself, you do really well. But I never shook that. But then when I got in the military and I started to learn, like, you know, somebody could get on the fires net and blow this SAM battery up if you do your job correctly. Then I got interested and got really into it, and, you know, took as many of the engineering courses, computer, all of those types of things that I could. Just to be more efficient at, you know, targeting and helping out with that type of shit. So that's what really got me into it.
Does the A school for that job teach like signal theory and everything?
Yeah, all of that stuff. And then there's
so
like
how long? It must be pretty long, because that's a lot.
Almost a year. And then all of the follow-on schooling that gets done mostly through the NSA was like another 2 years, where you go from like intermediate all the way up to like, you know, expert signal theory.
Were you up at Meade or something? Where were you for this?
I rotated in and out of Meade a lot. Most of my schooling was at Meade. And then the Army's got this thing where they essentially trade billets with the NSA and the other three-lettered organizations.
There's one down in San Antonio, a big one down there.
Yep, exactly. And you trade out and, you know, you'll go on like an NSA deployment rotation or whatever and get farmed out. And I did that and just, I got into an accepted career program later in the military where if I wasn't deployed, I got to sign up for whatever school I wanted. It was like ethical hacking, engineering, technical operators courses, learning cool shit, like how to make a concealment device. Or how to wire up a bumper to have a camera in it. Like really cool shit like that. And that is what grabbed me and then really made me into like what you, quote unquote, what you call an engineer.
Sure. And then you you say you started actually doing the job 4 to 5 years in. I assume at some point during that period is where you reenlisted for the first time.
Yep. Yeah. So I reenlisted actually on my second tour to Iraq. I'm going to say this a lot because it could be I could do a whole different podcast on that altogether. But I was really long story short, I was really questioning what we were doing in Iraq, and I wasn't sure that I believed in the mission at that time. Obviously, I was deployed. I had actually missed my son's birth because of that deployment, which I think also fed into me being pissed off. But excuse me.
Yeah, get a drink.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty common on a lot of people's first deployments, definitely on mine. But it was within like 2 weeks of being out in theater, I was like, this is fucking stupid.
Yeah. I got so like, I'm we're
not doing it. We're not doing anything here. Yeah. We're just like we're playing like a game of chess that never ends. There's no king or queen in either on either of these fucking board. We're just moving pawns around all day.
Yeah, there's one king. He grew up in Tikrit, and now we're chasing him all over the place, and nobody knows where he is.
Yeah, but where was he?
What's that?
He was in Tikrit.
Yeah, he was in Tikrit, right? Right.
Of course he was. Where the fuck was he going to go?
So I'm a slow learner, and on my second deployment is when I really started to feel like this is... I just didn't understand it, what we were doing. Interestingly, what I did gravitate towards was kind of understanding why America was different. I had been traveling. I had lived in Germany at that point. I had been to Africa a few times, Iraq. And what I did pick up on was the world over, no one enjoys, at that time, the rights and the privileges that we enjoyed as Americans. And then it became more about the people that I served with. You know, you'd go to the airfield, the tarmac, and there'd be the line, you know, someone had died in the unit, in the 1st Armored Division or whatever. And there would be a service. And then I started thinking about what is different about our country versus every other country, and why would people be willing to die for this? And I was young at the time. I think on that deployment, I was maybe 23. So I have an addictive personality. When I get into something, it's very difficult for me to get out of it until I feel like I have a full understanding of it. So I started going back to like our nation's founding and the Federalist Papers and, you know, reading some of what they based their writings on, Thomas Hobbes, de Tocqueville. And just anytime I wasn't, you know, getting ready for a mission or going somewhere, I was reading those books. And it kind of, I won't say the Western Enlightenment, because a lot of what I read actually predated the Western Enlightenment. But then I realized, actually, we do have something quite different here that is worth protecting. I'm not sure we're doing it correctly here, but I went into that deployment thinking I was going to get out of the military afterwards. And I actually ended up reenlisting while I was there. And it wasn't until I'd been in for like 6 years that I actually had an understanding of what it meant to be a soldier, the experience that I was protecting and what I was a part of. And then once I felt like I had an understanding for that, that's when I reenlisted. And I did that while I was deployed. I don't know if you ever went to the Al-Fal Palace or not, but it's where it was, you know, one of Saddam's major, one of his main palaces out of all of the other ones they had. Or maybe it was Victory Over America. Anyway, there was a big throne that he would greet people. If you Google Saddam Hussein greeting, you know, whoever, it's the people from the PLO or something, I don't know. He'd be on that throne. So I reenlisted in front of that throne. I thought that would be a cool way to do it.
And, did you get a picture of yourself sitting in it?
Yep.
Sweet. So it's like the Game of Thrones chair. You got to take advantage. Right? Yeah. If you see one out in the wild, you got to sit in that thing.
Yeah. And get a photo. I feel like a lot of people did that too, but yeah, I did it. And that's when I reenlisted. And that for me was a, if someone were to ask me to write a book about my life, I'd say that was the coming of age part for me. It was a little later than everyone else, but it really made me, it just, that changed me fundamentally. And I understood what we were doing and why this was special. And surprisingly enough, I'd been in there for 5 years and not known all of those things. But yeah, that kind of changed me.
And then you reenlist while you're there into the same MOS, or are you changing jobs at this point?
Well, I reenlisted and I asked.
Your career took a turn.
I'm sorry, say that again.
At some point you moved into not a new line of work necessarily, but a new job, certainly.
Yeah, I had reenlisted and asked for, you know, some schools that I wanted to go to. There was a reenlistment bonus. And then I said, you know, I wanted to go, and there was a incentives that for some schools. And I essentially went and went back after that deployment and started getting ready for my next deployment, and was doing like, I don't know how to explain it. I was just telling Danik about this earlier, but essentially I got pulled into a, I guess you'd call it a special mission unit, but it was like, I call it like the military accepted career program, where they allow you to just learn like one thing. You get recruited into it. It was actually kind of weird how I got recruited into it. There was a woman who was in civvies speaking to us at NSA Hawaii about signal theory, and she had said a few things that were wrong. And I had, when I was young, I was even more of a douchebag than I am now. And I just called her out in the middle of the brief and said, like, hey, you're saying shit that's not correct. And I remember my battalion commander was like, dude, shut up. Like, shut up. Or no, it was my company commander. It was a guy named Terry Fry. He's a he was a third group guy. And or 10th group guy. Anyway, he's like, dude, shut up in these briefs. Just shut up and listen. It's like, all right, sorry. Well, after the briefing, she came to me and she was like, hey, I was misspeaking. And you know, you actually made some good points. have you ever heard of, you know, this program? It was called the Great Skill Program. And I had said no. And she briefed me up on it. And you had to go through all kinds of like testing. And then each branch that you go into has its own Q course. And then you get farmed out and do all of this stuff. And that's kind of where my career took another turn. And then I went into that area where you're really allowed to just, once you make it through like the selection and the qualification, you're really allowed to just focus on whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And then you go and deploy and do other things. So I got to do some cool stuff while I was in there. I got, you know, designed some of my own kit to take on deployment, advised in some really cool shops. I spent like a little over a year advising at DARPA, which is kind of like the black box. People for the DOD that are supposed to build like wild and crazy shit. I got to do some really cool stuff. And like I said, when I was 16 and enlisting, all of the stuff that I thought I would have to do, it took me like 7, 8, 9, 10 years, but then I was actually doing it. Whereas a lot of my buddies that I went through school with were in for like 4 years and like, well, this was dumb and not what I thought it was going to be, and got out. So yeah, that was kind of another change for me. And then another one beyond that was going to warrant officer school, which really allowed me to focus on the technical side of stuff. And like I said, I don't know if we had started recording or not, like I actually have a fair amount of guilt because I've done nothing but benefit from my military service. Like it's done nothing but help me, like from a trailer park in North Dakota with, you know, a single mom who's a waitress to, you know, advising at DARPA or, you know, going out and, doing intelligence collection for, you know, real operations where, you know, you're actually affecting change on the battlefield, and it's not some abstraction where you hope that your work is going to help someday. I actually got to see the effect of it. Yeah. It was extremely fulfilling.
Do you think that woman was recruiting you by using bad information in the brief?
That's a possibility.
Or recruiting the room, maybe?
I've never thought of that. Her name was Jen, and I don't know if I'm supposed to say her last name or not, but extremely intelligent. What's that?
No need to say your last name, yeah. But it seems like somebody that's in that position at that level with those agencies wouldn't make a mistake.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so either.
Especially not one that's in a PowerPoint, right? That maybe they would make a mistake in a conversation, but not something they prepared for. It just seems like you probably got recruited.
Yeah, that's totally a possibility. And that's how that organization worked at the time was like that. And it was very much like rank immaterial. There were situations where you'd have a warrant officer working for an enlisted dude. You know, very lone operator, you know, out there in the middle of nowhere doing your thing. So they really prioritized kind of technical ability, language ability, and then autonomy and like self-starting. Mm-hmm. Whereas some people are great at self-starting in the military. Other people aren't. Like, they need to be told what to do.
Sure, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's like, that's why the rank structure exists.
Right.
I mean, it's just a mirror image of society, really. You know, people of different capabilities and I don't know how you would phrase it. I don't know. Some people just have the ability to work autonomously and others don't. You know what I mean? They're task-oriented instead of bigger picture-oriented. I think warrant officer people typically can do both pretty well. It's interesting to me because most of the chiefs that I know are polymaths. They know a lot about a lot of different things, but their job, their role in the military is to be very good at one thing, right? Just one specific. They're of all the people in the military that refer to themselves as subject matter experts, the warrant officer is the true subject matter expert, typically, right?
Yeah, you hope so.
Yeah. So it's really interesting to me to see how different people. It's a sorting process that just happens kind of naturally, right? Because your will and instinct will make you decide to stay in instead of getting out, or make you decide to pursue certain things instead of getting away from them. And I think it's just a sociological free market, really, right? You just let and that's why I like passive recruiting like that, right? Like making you opt in to doing something. I used to do that to people all the time. Just set conditions where they're going to have the balls to do something, frankly, right?
Yeah.
Like, I know your commander probably wasn't thrilled about it because he just wants to get the fuck out of that meeting and go somewhere, anywhere else in the world, and not get a fucking email from somebody like, hey, who's that cocksucker running his mouth in there? Now, to the other part about you only benefiting from this, the NSA is not a very popular organization
anymore.
And so, like, as a parallel, I guess, I know a lot of police who aren't thrilled with how modern policing is going. There's a lot of knuckleheads in the ranks. There's not nearly enough people taking it on themselves to train properly, all this stuff. Militarization in a lot of cities that a lot of my more libertarian cop friends are kind of not on board with. But they don't just walk off the job because they're not stupid. They know the job still needs to get done, right?
Right.
We can't just not police our community. So I don't know what I would do today after the events of the last 5 or 6 years or so. I mean, even, to be honest, the entire 21st century, but especially recently, if I was in a second position with the U.S. government, I'm not sure how I think I would have to leave, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, but it's – so it's not like – You benefited a lot, and you've turned it into a very good business and a very smart one too, but there's still like that still isn't the best situation in the world.
No,
to be honest,
not at all. I mean, if it were up to me, all of those organizations would be downsized by 80% and spread throughout the U.S. All of them,
not in like, D.C. You mean?
Yeah, they're all in D.C. They're all bureaucrats. They all posture and position. Like, for me, I didn't really see it firsthand until I became an advisor. Essentially, the office that's responsible for all of the ethical hacking in the military, what you would call ethical hacking, is a two-star command that has a general officer who's responsible for building all of this stuff. That was like, and I had just gotten promoted to CW4 when I was in that office. And so I was his advisor and a Colonel 06's advisor for all of this stuff. And when I got behind the scenes and I saw the political, like going to the Pentagon with them and watching them brief congressional members or Senate oversight members and seeing what they were focused on, the entire process disgusted me and made me wonder how any of it got set up. And the more I dealt with it, the dirtier I felt. And I knew, and I actually just had somebody reach out to me about this because I mentioned it on another podcast that I was on. I knew for a fact I was not going to be like 95% of my cohorts and my peers at the W4 level when we retire, they come back as a contractor or as an advisor in the same organization. And I just knew that it wasn't, and I'm not better than them, but I'm just different. I knew A, that wasn't going to be something I'd be able to do, and B, if I were to, I wouldn't survive long because
of your fucking mouth.
Yeah, because of my mouth. Yes.
And I'm the same way.
No, like, exactly.
I worked at FDNS at USCIS for 1 year.
Yeah.
It's their fraud detection and national security intel wing. And it was the same thing for me. I'm like, I am a ticking time bomb in this place.
That's exactly how I felt.
I gotta get the fuck out of here or they're just going to fire me because I can't stop talking shit.
Yeah. And so on a separate, I have someone who's very close to me who's about to become a senior leader in the FBI. And I'm watching what's happening to her and the way that that organization is as corrupt, as self-involved, as bureaucratic, and as useless as an organization can be. And I mean, I have intimate knowledge on watching what's happening to this person. And it needs to be cut down by 80% and put in Kansas City.
Mm.
And then the NSA needs to be cut down by 80% and put in Spokane, Washington. And like they all stay in the same places. It's all personality driven. It's all who you know. And most of the people, and when I say most, I'd say 95% of them, have never done the job that they're now in charge of. And it's all about like ring kissing. And I'm not like a what would you say, like a scorned wife or something where, you know, the institution, I applied and wanted to work at the NSA.
No, you like, did the thing.
I could have certainly gone into that and done it.
Yeah.
It's just when you really pull, you know, you see the wizard behind the curtain, it was frightening. And one of the things that motivates me with Spartan Forge and actually allows me, first off, I have, like I said before, an addictive personality, and I almost never stop thinking about working. And I love working and producing and building things. But whenever I start feeling lazy, I worry about having to call one of my friends and being like, hey, dude, Spartan Forge has failed. I need a job. You know, because I still advise some of these guys, they'll call me up and say, I've got a friend who does the same job I did in the military, and now he does red teaming for a bank.
Mm-hmm.
I won't name the bank, but his job is basically to go on the bank website and screw shit up and then formalize a report for them and send it back. And so he'll call me and say, you know, what do you think about these methods I'm using here? What would you do here? Blah, 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 blah. And he always offers me like a retainer to help him, but I don't need one because I just enjoy watching things getting broke, like breaking things more than I like building things even more. I live in fear of having to call him or someone else who's in a government organization and being like, you know, my experiments failed and now I need to put my hat in my hand and come back and take a job. That makes me run even harder and work even harder than actually just the enjoyment of what I'm doing, which is a strange thing to say, but for me, I would rather run scared than run mad. I run better scared.
Well, I talk about that all the time, about call it what you want, yin yang, push pull, right? It's like this concept of binary motivators is true in all of life, no matter what you're talking about.
Sure.
And with motivation like that, to me, I put fear behind me now. It's not death, like for us. I talked about this on the panel the other day, but we're not particularly afraid of death, but letting down our people scares us a lot, right? Like for you failing and having to go do some shit you find unethical, not just because of your personal ethics probably, but because of the family, I would imagine. It's good to keep that behind you, right? Because you don't want to fuck that up.
And I have a fear of letting myself down. Like I have an idea of who I want to be and where I want to go and what my virtues are. And I live in a lot of fear of like not living up to that. Like that to me is worse than death. And I think that's actually like from a Christian perspective, I think it's like where the idea of original sin comes from, which is if you as a father or as a brother or as a soldier disgrace yourself, you're not only disgracing yourself, you're disgracing everyone around you and everyone who comes after you. It's like my son, if I disgrace myself, my son will live with that.
Sure.
And that to me is worse, far worse than death, in my estimation anyway. Yeah.
I want your take on what's happened recently. So, I don't really like politicians. You may have picked up on that.
Yeah, I've watched a few podcasts. I've picked up on that.
And they just, the Congress just decided to not just extend, but expand FISA 702, which is essentially the ability to warrantless wiretap Americans. whenever the fuck they want, frankly, as long as as long as there's some thread to a foreign anything now, right? So they added counter-narcotics to the list, which was never, it was all terrorism before. It's all national security. Now counter-narcotics is a predicate for getting a, like, let's say you have family in Mexico, right? And they live in a cartel town. Every phone call you make to them now would justify a warrantless wiretap on all your devices. Theoretically, right? And I say theoretically kind of tongue-in-cheek because I think these three-letter agencies take more liberties way more often than we're aware of, and we're aware of a lot at this point. So is there any hope of reining any of this shit back in, or are we just going to have to, like, become Luddites and start passing paper notes to each other? This episode is brought to you by GhostBed. GhostBed.com/drinkingbros Go there today and get 50% off site-wide. All their mattresses, all the sheets, everything. They've got the GhostBed Classic. They've got the GhostBed 3D Matrix. They've got the GhostBed Lux. And now they've got the new one, the GhostBed Flex Hybrid. All these are cooling mattresses. They're the best in the business. They also have the new technology that we've been looking for all this time. Well, not we, just Joel, which is the RV mattress. Now, if you've got one of these things, you know that you can't find a mattress that fits them appropriately, at least not a good one. And the ones that come with them are terrible. So if you're you know, an RV person, you definitely want to jump on that. And by the way, they got the best pillows in the business. You've heard me say it before, but I travel with these things. That's how good they are. It's kind of a pain in the ass, but not as bad as sleeping on hotel pillows, I'll tell you that much. So go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today. Use the code Ghost or Drinker Bros at checkout. You're going to get 50% off all the mattresses. Check them out today. We've been with them for a while. I've got them all over my house. You know they're good. So my best advice here is go for the 3D Matrix. It's the most comfortable bed I've ever slept on in my life. Go get it today. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros Use the code Drinker Bros. You're going to get 50% off. That's 50% off. You're not going to get a better deal. This episode is brought to you by firstform.com/citizen Free shipping on all orders over $75 when you use the link. And you're not going to spend less than $75. I mean, they get the best products in the world, especially the OptiGreens. You know me, I don't eat vegetables because they're fucking pointless. So I supplement with OptiGreens 50 from First Form. It is precisely formulated green superfood powder meant for overall immune system support and digestive health. It's really good, aside from just getting the daily greens into your body that you need. And make sure, by the way, you're taking this with MCT, because you have to take anything like this with MCT. 80% of your immune system is located in your gut and your digestive tract, right? So healthy digestion is essential for overall health and wellness, not to mention that most of your serotonin, I think 96% of your serotonin or 94% is made in your gut as well. So you're going to be in a better mood. You're going to feel better physically, and you're going to feel better mentally if you are taking these greens. OptiGreen 50 has 50 chosen ingredients, effectively dosed. It's not necessarily how many ingredients there are, though, but it's about the right amount of each. Taste and texture, not like no other product in the market. It's not gritty. It doesn't have a weird flavor. It's got sweet berry flavors, actually. 100% of the greens are all grown and manufactured inside the United States, and they are bioavailable. Now, they've got other products as well. They've got the Microfactor, which you see behind me on every show, and I take them every day. You know, you got essential fatty acids, CoQ10, you get all the stuff you need in one little packet for your daily vitamin pack. And you mix that, you make yourself OptiGreens 50 shake, and you take those pills with it, and you're going to improve your life precipitously. You're going to feel better, you're going to look better, so on and so forth. So go to firstform.com, that's 1STPHORM.com/citizen Use the code, you're going to get free shipping on all orders over $50. This episode is also brought to you by BlackRifleCoffee.com, the best coffee in the world. As a matter of fact, they won both the gold and bronze medal at the Golden Bean Awards this year for their exclusive coffee club entries in the elite category. So the best coffee on earth literally was Circus Bear by Black Rifle, one of their ECS. So I recommend that you go sign up for the Black Rifle Coffee Club. Use the code CITIZEN. You're going to get those points off. And, you know, you get all the benefits for being in the coffee club. You get the free shipping. You get access to all the partner deals. You get access to the exclusive coffee club. You get access to any new products that come out before anybody else does. You know, it's a very large club that they have over there, and the coffees are premium. Every single one of them is good. You're going to get experience for you. You can do just the plain coffee club, and if you want your two bags of espresso or your two bags of silencer smooth or whatever it is you drink, you can get those two bags or one bag or whatever you want every month, or rather, you can use the ECS, the Exclusive Coffee Club, and get access to some of the most premium coffees on the planet and kind of learn what it is that you like. You know what I mean? So then you can order those premium coffees from Black Rifle as well. So, and we all know they got the best branding, the best merch, and they're buddies. You know, we're all friends here. We love Black Rifle. So go to blackriflecoffee.com, sign up for the coffee club, or buy something, do whatever you want. Use the code CITIZEN, you're going to get those points off.
We've dug this hole where we've tried to abstract responsibility, and the government's been willing to do that as long as we're willing to get rid of our liberty. They've been happy to take on these things. And the FISA and the FISA courts, even you can go all the way back to Church and Pike, and you can start to pull the thread on how all of this stuff falls apart, to the, you know, the select subcommittee that started looking at first some of the first violations of the Constitution and of our Bill of Rights. You know, we've got this pesky Fourth Amendment, which is supposed to be a buttress to all of these things. And it seems like people are willing to do the old, I'll trade my liberty for some security. And I've got nothing, like, I'll talk to people about this who I think are smart, well-read, and thoughtful people. And they'll be like, well, I really don't have anything to hide. And I'm like, that's not the point here, dude. Like, that's not the point here at all. This government might get to a point where you're going to have things to hide. And that's the purpose of the First, Second, Fourth, Tenth Amendment. I think on a larger, you know, what, yes, that's all wrong and it needs to go away. And I think downsizing them and spreading them out, we need an intelligence mechanism. My thought on the intelligence mechanism is it should go back under the U.S. Army or under the military. We don't need, you know, it's a whole nother thing, but clandestine human and SIGINT and all of those things have become their own organizations that have outgrown their mandate, and they don't, they're supposed to be there to support the military, and they don't anymore. They're doing their own thing. So on the FISA side of the house, those FISA courts and their instantiation were wrong. The you would basically, as an operator, you would say, hey, I think someone so-and-so is a bad guy. Then you'd go to the secret panel court where these submissions were made, and then the judge that nobody's name knew said, yeah, go ahead and wiretap that guy.
Yeah.
And then they'd wiretap that guy. And that's not at all how our judge, our system is supposed to work from a judicial framework. And now they're just expanding it, and they're saying the quiet part out loud. Now we're just going to monitor anyone that we want to whenever we want to.
Yeah. I mean, that's essentially what this expansion says. They expanded the entities that are required to participate in FISA to, let's see, any person or company with access to equipment on which electronic communications travel or are stored, regardless of whether they are a direct provider, which means
everyone,
your landlord,
right,
has to let the NSA or whomever, the FBI, into the building to tap your fucking phone line if they want, if they ask, right? Yeah. Not that they would need to do that.
They don't even need to do that anymore, yeah.
But like install surveillance equipment inside your property, right?
Yep.
Like without a warrant.
Yep. Yeah, and that stuff's getting so good that you'd never know about it.
Not great.
No, it's not great, and it's seeming to go faster and be more aggressive lately. I think it's because of all of the chaos that we are in as a country right now allows them to kind of slip things in. And we're so busy focusing on, you know, who we hate that's a Democrat, who we love that's a Republican, who we hate that's a Republican, who we love that's a Democrat, and getting this polarization going, that they're able to do these types of things. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, oh, we had, you know, September 11th happen, Patriot Act.
Yeah. Yeah. Which was worked out great.
Right.
It's certainly, to your point about moving the intelligence community back under the military, I've got thoughts on that. I mean, one, we shouldn't even have a standing army. The Constitution doesn't authorize a standing army. I think we should have a Navy and a Marine Corps, right? That deal with transportation and shipping. The reason I say that is because of the Powell Doctrine. It's like the three elements that need to be present to go to war are the public will, which would manifest itself in people volunteering for, to fucking fight, right? Mm-hmm. And then a clear and defined end state, and then overwhelming force is the last one. We don't have to do that anymore. We've made this massive weapon, and if we don't use it from time to time, then it either gets stale or somebody doesn't get paid or both, right? And now we have the impetus to always be using that weapon. We have to. Every so often, we have to use it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I even hear my friends that are still in right now saying, we need to do something soon to test our new equipment or whatever. It's like, we're going to go to war just to test equipment? That doesn't seem like a very good use of our human capital, to be honest. But I do think that some military needs to exist, and the intelligence organization should certainly be the same relationship as the military, which is military responsible for these activities under civilian control instead of civilian bureaucrats under civilian control.
Right.
Civilian bureaucrats who will straight up tell their civilian leadership to go fuck itself.
Right.
I mean, honestly, people in the military very rarely, in the intelligence community in the military, aren't going to fucking get a mandate and orders from Congress and then go do something diametrically opposed to it. But the CIA and NSA do it all the time.
All the time.
Right? So the relationship between civilian governance and military handling matters of security is really fucking important. Yep. It's important to have one in charge of the other, right?
Yes.
But that's not what we have anymore.
Yes.
And it also, to your other point, it hasn't helped us at all to intel-wise to diffuse the intelligence community across multiple agencies. How is that fucking helping anybody?
Not helping us at all.
I mean, it's if you read any of the 9/11 commission reports, that's the one of the primary issues.
Yep.
That we had. That and using SIGINT over HUMINT were the two main issues they point to.
Yeah.
And we've not only have we doubled down on it, we've 22'd down on it, right? There's 22 intelligence agency departments now or something like that.
Yes.
Or 22 members of the intelligence community. It's like, what the fuck are we doing here?
Yeah. And they all brief one Senate subcommittee yeah. comprised of like three people.
And it goes to your point from before about how it's just dumb bureaucrats who have never done the fucking job in charge of these people.
Yes.
Right. Like that. This is why, by the way, I think that H.W. Bush was probably a knock back in the day, because he was the DDO. And back in those days, you didn't get to be the DDO if you didn't have field experience. That wasn't a thing. You may be the director of the agency, but you're not going to be the DDO. That's the most important job in the entire intelligence community, right?
Yeah, exactly. I would have to agree with you. I don't know anything about that. But he definitely carried himself like a spook.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also ambassador to China, wasn't he, at some point?
Yes,
I know so, for yeah. sure he was the ambassador to the United Nations.
In 74, maybe?
Yeah.
Or I think it was, yeah, I think it was in the mid-70s.
Yeah. Yes. And there's so much. I mean, just the fact that they only brief select members of Congress, and those select members of Congress, of the Senate, have their own, they're all, their biggest thing when they get into office and listening to them speak and being in the room with them is always, they're always like a general officer, hyper-focused on like one thing, and that's all you can get them to talk about. But then on top of that, that one thing almost always is feeding how they get reelected. So that's the optic that they look at everything through. And that's not an optic that you want a Senate subcommittee looking at when they're considering intelligence operations and who's doing what where, and that only three people are being briefed on this. And that's even if it's acknowledged. You know, if people go through our classification guides and understand how things get classified, at what level it's classified, who gets need to know, how do they get need to know, where does it flow from? It blows my mind that it's not obvious to people that we've had these types of really you know, MK Ultra and some of those other things that are documented. You can say you sound crazy when you bring them up, but that's Americans drugging Americans and then studying it, and they're being drugged unknowingly.
Yeah.
How does that happen? Like how, like, and why is not everyone who is involved with that in prison somewhere? I don't care if they're 90. Mm. Like, we need to go find those guys in Florida, and they need to be hauled in front of the whole thing. I always used to get upset. My uncles would talk craziness when I was a kid, and a lot of the, you know, we need to be back on the gold standard and all of this stuff. And I'd like roll my eyes and be like, oh my God, these guys are doing it again. And now I'm here at 40 and I'm like, you know, way worse than they were. Way worse than they were.
I mean, it's the OSS did a pretty good job. Right.
What's your definition of pretty good job?
They didn't fuck anything up worse than it already was. I guess in the intelligence community, that's probably a win.
Yeah, that is a win. Yes, you could say that's a win.
But as soon as the players in OSS, when it changed to the agency, went from Army captains and colonels to Yale and Harvard graduates.
Yes.
It was all over then. It was academic at that point, right? Yeah. So that's why they're experimenting on fucking people.
And that's it's
wild as hell.
You're hitting on such a great point there, because that's another thing where I would be out, you know, in the middle of nowhere Africa on an operation, and I'd run into somebody from one of the organizations that you're talking about, and then you get to know these people. And it's like, I'm just the son or daughter of someone who was in this organization before.
Yeah.
And I was just, you know, working at Time Warner. And my dad said, it's time to go do my duty. So now I go to the farm and now I'm out here. And it's like, that's why you're here. And then I'm going to leave and write a book, or I'm going to, you know, go back and use this on my LinkedIn profile. And then and they're there because they knew someone or is the son or fell out of someone's vagina who is associated with that organization, and now they're there. And that is so antithetical to how you'd want the intelligence gathering mechanisms and the tentacles of the intelligence community out there.
I mean, it's like being born in the purple. Like, dude, we've realized there's no such thing as good and bad blood at this point in human history.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, we don't think that because you were born poor that has any effect on how you're going to perform later in life.
Right.
Because of the blood that's in your body. But these people still believe that.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, he's one of us. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, right.
Okay, I thought we were trying to avoid that whole aristocracy thing. But we dove or dived, maybe.
Maybe.
Dived headlong into it. Maybe people just need to be, maybe they're cucks, you know? They just need to be governed.
Some people govern me harder, Daddy.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly don't understand it. Now, when you got out a couple years ago, did you make WO5?
No.
Because that's like a unicorn. You don't see those very much.
Nope. I think I was still 2 years from getting looked at, even getting my first look, which I probably wouldn't have made it on my first look. Very few people make it on their first look.
What's the difference between a 4 and a 5? Is it like
going for you're pretty untouchable general? As a 4. Mm. You're as untouchable as a person can be in the U.S. Army, I believe, if you're a W5.
Why?
Because you work for the general, and the general's pretty disinterested in what you're doing. And if it's any technical matter, and some colonel wants to get an op order approved or a piece of kit built, if he's a good general, he'll say, go talk to chief. Mm. So you'll have O6s and 1-stars being like, hey, chief, we need your buy-in here. The old man needs to see this. He wants your signature on this staffing paper. So you really don't get messed with by anyone. As long as you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, and you're productive, and you're focusing, and you're technically relevant and competent, it really is the greatest job in the military.
But so you're doing mostly, and this is true of all chief positions, because you are, as we mentioned, a subject matter expert, but you're primarily advising at 5? Or are you doing research projects?
Well, you're getting into the politics of it, too. You're writing doctrine, you're approving doctrine.
White papers and shit.
White papers, but also, you know, technical manuals or FMs. Mm. You're doing that training. You know, you're more part, they used to call it the G357, but, you know.
Do you have to rotate through call or anything like that? Are they still doing that? Like
I think the senior leaders course does it.
Yeah.
I only went to, when you're going to be a 5 or you become a 5, I believe you do the call stuff. Mm. I never went to
like you have to go stuff. Be kind of a professor, not a professor, but you have to go instruct and stuff.
Yes.
At least to learn how to do it.
Almost all of them go through the schoolhouse and then become some type of, you know, dean of a schoolhouse for that type of stuff. That
makes sense. That's a pain in the ass. So instead of doing that, you decided to get out and start Spartan Forge, which if I had to give somebody a single sentence on what it is, you're building target packages on deer.
All animals. Yes.
Right.
Spartan. Yes. We started on deer.
I like that.
We started with deer, but now it's really just Spartan Forge is doing variable analysis on the targeting cycle and abstracting the targeting cycle from a terrorist and applying it to an animal and trying to make it so seamless that you don't even know when you're using the application that you're engaging in a targeting cycle. It's feeding it to you, and then you're just getting that kind of structured analysis so you can become successful in the field for whatever your pursuit is, whether you're a major hunting nerd like, you know, Steve Runella 3.0, or you're a guy who just wants to drop pins in the woods and go sit in a tree stand. Like, it will help all of those people.
How does it help?
Well, that variable analysis and structuring it,
Well, what are the data points it's collecting?
So
is what I wanted to ask, I guess.
So on the artificial intelligence side, there's a bunch. And artificial intelligence is a marketing term. Mm. And it's not a marketing term that I particularly like, because really it's pattern analysis. And people talk about there being a general artificial intelligence in like the next 5 years or something. I personally think we're like 50 years from it. I don't think we're going to get anywhere near a general. And what I mean by general intelligence is like, this is essentially a human brain in a box.
Sure.
And can do anything that we can do, but better. I think we're 50 years away from that. That's my own person. I could be very wrong. I'm not an expert by any means on this. I work in it. I work with it. I touch it every day. But, you know, I'm not sitting around at MIT with Lex Fridman talking about, you know, LSTMs or something like that. But I think we're a lot farther off from it. But that artificial intelligence segment, we use collared animal data. So whether it's an elk or a white-tailed deer, they'll wear a GPS collar. We feed that to the machine and give it context like weather, terrain, and then tell it to predict on.
Wait, are you collaring animals? Where's that data
coming
from?
We're not. We're getting it from universities.
Okay.
Or private organizations or, you know, things that do it on their own.
Anybody that's studying a herd.
Anybody that's studying it. Yep. Okay. And then we build stuff out with that. And then we're doing the mapping because you have to centralize it, make it palatable for a hunter. So it gets contextualized inside of like a map. There's a journaling feature.
Do you have like hot zones? How does it display on the map? Is it just
so
pinpoints?
We will, in about 6 months, maybe less, it will tell you areas that it thinks are interesting for you to go and scout. Mm. It's not meant to replace craftsmanship or woodsmanship. Sorry, woodsmanship. It's not meant to replace that. But we do have an epidemic of a bunch of fully grown 35-plus-year-old men that have never picked up a rifle or a bow and gone out.
And a compass.
Or a compass.
Yeah.
They don't know what an azimuth is. They've never dead reckoned. But we do have, I think, an eager younger generation that sees that void and wants to learn those things. And we talked earlier, maybe before we were on camera, about value hierarchy. My highest value is individual autonomy. I want people to be independent actors that have thought through things on their own and are learning, whether it's through my app or other things, how to go out and kind of do their own thing. And be as informed and have the information at their fingertips that they need on where they can scout. And then not only will it show them where to scout, it will teach them and tell them why. So we have our own large language model, which is just like having an expert hunter on your phone or on your computer. You can say, how can I hunt this property? Or I've just bought this property. How do I plant this soil? Or how do I plant soybeans on this soil? Or this is the acidity. How do I build my own SOPMOD 2 build? For this rifle, it will walk you through all of that stuff. How do I, you know, what sight should I get? How do I teach, you know, I want to teach my buddies how to do an in-depth or a depth and lateral drill. It can do all of that stuff, but it also can teach you hunting, survival, prepping, any of those things that you want to get into. This large language model is an expert at it, and we've been training it for a couple of years. So it does that, and then it contextualizes it inside of a map. So it's got that AI that does the prediction of animal movement. It's got the AI that you can interact with to learn, and then it contextualizes that all within a map so that you can actually physically look and see where you're going and what you're doing. And then there's other stuff on there with like draw tags. Like if you're from the east and you want to go out west and hunt elk in Montana, it can tell you the odds of drawing in certain units. It does weather. It does historical weather. Again, I started it with that, but it's every aspect of the targeting cycle for, in this context of hunting, what does a hunter need to know? And then we're centralizing it all inside of an application. And the goal here is individual autonomy. People being learning and not getting an easy button. It's going to show them. They'll be able to learn and understand the why. And then the hope is in 2 or 3 years, they don't need the app for other than not getting lost in the dark in the woods. They've learned it all. And then they can go out and do it for themselves. And one of the videos that we're publishing here, we're going to put together pretty soon, is we're going to give a kid a bow, some old shitty camo, Cyber Scout and the app and say, go learn how to shoot this bow and learn how to hunt. Ask Cyber Scout, our AI, everything that you don't know, let it teach you. We'll document it. And then my hope is that it ends with him or her putting some meat on mom's table and saying, here's 60 pounds of venison that we couldn't afford otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I did this with this $39 app, or excuse me, $59 app. Because that kid was me, and without a dad growing up, I wouldn't have had access to learn about how do I make brain tan? How do I take this deer cape and brain tan it? How do I shoot an azimuth? How do I dead reckon? How do I do all of these things? And if that kid lives in the south side of Chicago without a, you know, a father figure for whatever reason, and mom doesn't have the time to teach him, he's going to be able to learn through this application for less than he'd be able to get a steak at Ruby Tuesdays. Yeah. And that to me is a noble cause.
Sure. Are you going to have like how to find a meat processing plant? Because some states require that shit, depending on what you're doing, right?
Yeah, and we've actually loaded all of the state regulations into it. So you'll be able to say, I'm in New Jersey, I've just harvested a doe. You know, what do I need to do? It'll be able to cite the information and then link you to the website to go and look that stuff
up. The U.S. isn't bad. Have you thought about Canada? Because Canada has wild-ass rules up there.
Like yeah.
If you kill a bear, you have to cut something out of it and leave it there.
Yeah, I've heard some of that. God, what is it?
The gallbladder or something like that?
Yeah,
because Asian tourists will fucking just murder a bear and eat that thing and then fuck off somewhere. Yeah. I don't think we have any regulations that are that strict here, really.
There are some crazy ones. Not crazy, just like you wouldn't expect it. Mm. But we are working on Canada right now and deploying it up there. Deploying it to Canada and soon in the U.S. is going to bring along with it its own problem. Mm. And the problem is most of my stack right now is on Amazon Web Services. Mm. So all of my everything technically that the app serves up is on Amazon. I'm making my own stack right now with a couple of buddies so that I can't be outlawed. Mm. Because at some point, somebody's going to use Cyber Scout to build a rifle and go shoot a friend or something. Something crazy is going to happen. And then Amazon's going to be like, we can't support your app anymore because some kid did what he could have Googled and used it to go do this. So I'm building my own back end stack so that, and it's going to be mobile so that if Canada is like, hey dude, you know, up here, we don't use guns. So the kid here, he can't learn how to shoot a gun here. So you got to shut that off. And I'll be like, yeah, or you can fuck yourself.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it out there anyway. This is information. Everyone's available. Information should be available to anyone. And you as a government should fuck off when it comes to who gets to learn what. So when I do that, they could call Bezos and be like, hey, Spartan Forge runs on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And his wife could be like, yeah, I don't like that kids are learning how to use, you know, a 30-06 to shoot up deer. So shut them down.
Well, they did it too. Amazon didn't, but Shopify and a couple other places did it to Mike Glover.
Yep.
What, 2 years ago, maybe?
Yep. So I'm building my own stack so that I'm uncancelable. And that's what I've been using all of the money that I'm making on Spartan Forge that I personally would be making. I'm reinvesting into this other stuff so that even if Drinking Bros, right, say you host your website on Spotify and they don't like what you're saying, or Shopify, and they don't like what you're saying, I'll be like, hey, dude, just throw it onto my stack. And then no one can, as long as we have an IP address for you and a cell phone connection. Mm-hmm. And even if the way I'm building it is, even if my county cancels me, they're all in trailers. Mm. So I just hook it up to the trailer and go to the next county and say, you want my tax revenue? Here you go. We're here. So I'm trying to get that built and finished, which I'm close to. I shouldn't say I am. We are close to. Spartan Forge, not Spartan Forge, it's actually a separate entity. Friends of mine are building this, and it's actually built. We're just kind of testing it out right now because these people want control and they hate individual autonomy and they hate the truth. And when they see it, they will do what they can to cancel it. And they are the actual cancel culture people. Mm. So that's, you know, with my hope, I'll become uncancelable in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good goal to have. You mentioned Dead Reckoning a minute ago. You're a nerd like me. Did the new Mission Impossible movie title piss you off? Because they're like trying to sound cool, but it's like Dead Reckoning is pointing an azimuth finding an object like a tree that's on that path and just putting your compass away and walking towards it. It's not like a fucking... Yeah. It's not like you're doing anything cool.
It's got very little to do with death.
Yeah. That, man, as soon as they announced the title for it, I'm like, this is fucking dumb.
You know, it's funny. I never thought of that. But yeah, now that you say it, yes, it's annoying me.
Oh, good. I'm glad I've annoyed you today. It's not just Danica I'm pissing off today.
Or the maybe, day is young.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll get there. Yeah, that's it's individual liberty and personal opportunity entrepreneurship. That's what America means to me.
That is precisely. And that was not a, that is right now, I feel, a controversial thing to say. Mm. And it was, I thought, forefront of everyone's mind 10 years ago. Like, I don't know what happened, but just like in the last 10 years, it seems like everyone's fucking crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even a lot of so-called conservatives, like half the people at the Daily Wire now are like, oh, you should listen when the government's telling you something, you should listen. Like, what the fuck did you just say?
Yeah, hello, conservative.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I don't know. I don't know that liberal and conservative mean anything anymore.
Means nothing.
Republican and Democrat certainly doesn't.
Nope.
Not to me anyways.
It's not a useful, that nomenclature almost means nothing to me now.
Which is good because I think that's true for a lot of people. There's always going to be some reticence and confusion during transitional periods, but I think it's good to every now and again re-examine the language we're using.
Yeah.
And maybe tighten it up a little bit or I don't know, put things in the right box because right now we just have a couple of boxes that are tipped over onto the ground, you know.
Yeah.
And they're kind of mixing together and nobody can tell what's what. I don't think that's very useful. I think, I don't think the federal government should even exist, frankly, but maybe I'm radical there. Well, not maybe, I'm definitely radical there. But should one exist?
So like you want to go back to like the Articles of Confederation?
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I think national defense, interstate highways, that's enough.
Do you think you're like 6 years from being a, what do you call them?
Anarcho-capitalist?
Yes.
No, I would never do that because I'm not naive enough to think, well, you know what? It's not naivety. Those people are just nihilistic and fatalistic. They're like, I want to go live my life the way I want to and fuck everybody else if they don't like it, right? Which is fair enough. That's your right to do that.
Yeah.
But if a critical mass of people don't invest in the community, then the community dissolves. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's actually a useful rubric, though. For me, the political system can be broken down with, do you want to be left alone and just do your thing? Mm. Or do you want to never leave anyone alone and never allow anyone to do their thing?
Mm.
Like, that's the spectrum that is useful to me because I can have just as much in common with the hairy-armed barista that made my coffee this morning that wants to smoke weed all afternoon, you know, and listen to Miles Davis.
Mm.
And she just wants everyone to leave her alone and do her thing. I probably have much more in common with her today than I do with, you know, let's see, name your Republican.
Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, just sent a bunch more of our money.
Or old Marbly Mouth, what's his name, from Kentucky.
Oh, Turtle Boy?
Yeah, Turtle Boy, yeah.
Cocaine Mitch McConnell?
Mitch McConnell, thank you. Mm-hmm. Like, I have nothing in common with those people at all, like, in any way, shape, or form. And I think that his family is engaging in, you know, old person abuse. Like he should be out somewhere living his last years with his grandchildren, not screwing shit up on the hill. Do you want to be left alone? And do you want people to generally leave you alone? And do you want to form your own associations, and do cool shit? Or do you want to just fuck with everyone else and never leave anyone alone and tell them what words they can use, where they can go, what light bulbs they can screw in, what toilets they can flush? Like it's gotten way, way, way too far.
Yeah. I mean, government, no matter how noble, eventually just becomes an engine to extract labor and wealth from the population. Right. No, there's a natural gravity to that stuff. Because human beings because of evolutionary reasons are very unlikely to surrender any power that they've conquered. Right. Even over their friends. To be honest, like we keep hand in relationships. We don't want people to be above us. It's a natural instinct, I think, and maybe it's out of self-preservation, but these people are pathological about it. Like they need to be in power. They have to be. And that's why they'll do anything to keep it. They'll say anything or change opinions, even if they don't actually believe it. And it's a problem, right? It's like, as a business owner, especially if you're in the messaging part of business, which is entertainment or news or anything like this, if you there are some good things about tailoring your message to the specific audience that you're speaking to, for sure. You learn that writing technical manuals, right? You have to write to that person's expertise level. But when it's a feedback loop where the customer always tells you, and you're chasing that fucking dopamine hit from the customer all the time, I think that's a bad. You get way separated from what your actual plan and mission were, right?
Yes, like
you're chasing it at that point. And it just never works out. I mean, you see companies that do this stuff all the time, especially in media. You see companies that do that stuff. They just chase popular opinion. Well, it might be the case that people are fucking idiots, right?
Yeah.
And that you shouldn't be basing what you're doing off of, like, a mathematician doesn't ask the community about his fucking formula. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that one person's above another, but there are experts. There are people who are experts in, like John Locke, for example, in property rights, like why it's so important. The idea of the right of association and property rights at the basic level are the two most fundamental human rights.
Yeah.
Right?
And self-preservation, self-protection. Yeah.
It's like there are people who know that, and then there are people who will try to negotiate with that principle. You don't negotiate with principles. That's the fucking that's the standard, right?
That's the point of a principle. So
that's where we are today. We're negotiating with all principles.
Well, that I think, and it, I shouldn't be. I won't be afraid of nerding out here because I feel like I'm amongst the nerds. So I'll go really deep on this. I one of the biggest things when they were framing the Constitution was: do we have a Bill of Rights? Do we acknowledge rights? Mm. Because if we acknowledge rights, we enumerate them, and if we enumerate them, then invariably some ass clown will think up something that's not on this list and then abuse it.
Yeah,
and that to me is an interesting thing. And,
well, that's the point of the 10th Amendment, right? Technically,
yeah. and it should be followed. Anything not spelled out in this document is left to the state.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't get followed. Everything is getting centralized because ass clowns centralize power.
Mm-hmm.
By their own nature, that's what they do. And now I forget where I was going with that, but let me think, because you just hit the nail on the head with me with the 10th Amendment, and I forgot which amendment I was going to talk about. But anyway, what was I saying? I don't remember why I got there. See, this is, you got me on a squirrel with the 10th Amendment.
Well, you were talking about being a nerd. That was definitely part of it.
Enumerating the rights and the Bill of Rights is where I was going with that. That is that the 10 amendments to the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, people don't understand that the government didn't grant us them.
Mm.
They are acknowledging things that were fundamental rights that government can't give them, and the government can't take them away because they flow from either nature or God, whatever you want to call it, and that they can't mess with them. So like your ability for speech and to articulate yourself and to have bad ideas and have them checked by people, or to have good ideas and allow them to flourish and propagate, your ability to self-protect, to have a firearm, to own a firearm and protect yourself and your family, or in its real usage, or the real reason why it was written, was to overthrow the government if they become tyrannical.
Mm-hmm.
The Fourth Amendment, we're just talked about with the FISA, how that's getting violated. The Tenth Amendment, I think one thing really people really overlook, it was the 17th Amendment. I think the 17th Amendment was one of the biggest usurpations on the American individual that's ever been propagated by the government, and that was Woodrow Wilson and the muckrakers and those other fucksticks that basically changed the way that our Senate gets elected. The point of the Senate was to protect state rights, and that the states should be more powerful than the federal government, which speaks to your idea about the federal government, you know, getting back to it being a feckless entity, which it should be. Was that the states were supposed to, from their legislatures and their governor, was supposed to come up with a senator who would go to the federal government and say, you're not passing Obamacare because I'm running my state correctly. And if this state's not running their state correctly, you're going to take our revenue and go pass it to this failing state so that they all get health care. Where the idea of the 10th Amendment was that failing state should look at the state that's doing well and say, we need to mimic that system. So you would have never had things like Obamacare or like some of these other huge federal entities or these unelected bureaucrats or these unelected organizations like the EPA that aren't accountable by vote because they're not put in place by people. They're not put in place by the democratic process. So what the found what they did with Woodrow Wilson was they made the Senate a redundant House of Representatives mm-hmm. by allowing a popular vote. And that stripped away states' rights. And states' rights is maybe one of the most important things so that we had this little free market of states so you could see who's doing things right, mm-hmm. who's doing things wrong, and they could emulate each other. And, you know, that rising tide would raise all boats. But what they did was they made it into a redundant House of Representatives where it's done by popular vote. And and Woodrow Wilson and those people did this, I believe, because they knew that the senators now, you know, if you live in North Dakota and you want to get elected in North Dakota or any other state for that matter, all you need to do is spend your time in Fargo. Mm. Now, if you're trying to get popularly elected in a state as a senator, just go campaign in Fargo. Mm. What is going to be the political bend of most people in that city? They're going to be left by their virtue because they're in a city. Most cities lean left, whereas the rest of that state that needs to provide the infrastructure and the food and the construction workers and the agriculture are going to go right. Well, Woodrow Wilson said, well, if I can get the state legislatures where across a state, that legislature would all have to agree, and they're that state senate senator would have the same vote for Fargo, North Dakota as Cass County, North Dakota, where the population is 500 and 500,000. But that state senator wouldn't get up to, that state senator wouldn't elect a federal senator to go up and represent their state unless he was satisfying that entire legislature. Mm-hmm. Well, what you've done by making it a redundant popular vote is just liberalize the Senate. And now they're not concerned with states' rights anymore. They're only concerned with popular opinion, which was the point of the House.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be where all the retarded ideas came out of. Mm-hmm. And then the Senate would be like, that's dumb, we're not doing that. That's dumb, we're not doing that. That's actually a good idea, we might do that. And those were supposed to be your business magnates, your leaders, your people who had built things. And they ruined the Senate, and the Senate doesn't protect states' rights. That was the whole point of it. And that has allowed for the liberalization of the federal government at a level that I don't think people talk about this.
Well, like, not even just amongst liberals or Democrats or anything. I mean, over the past 20 years, we've seen the largest expansion of the federal government in history.
Yes.
Under Republican administrations, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So it's like not even when you say liberal, you mean like actual liberalism, and that's fine, right? We need right and left.
Yeah.
To inform.
Well, I went back to using a rubric that I don't actually abide by.
Sure, but I think in this context it actually makes sense because expanding the federal government would be characteristic of a liberal ideology, in my opinion.
Yes, for sure. Centralization of federal power.
But so I think in your reference it still makes sense. But the reason I brought up the other point is that it's liberalized not just the left, but everybody.
Yeah.
Right. And everybody's kind of on that money train now. It's taken off, and that's it's a good analysis of the 17th Amendment. People don't know that. I don't think most people know, especially not kids these days. I've seen some of the civics classes they take. They have no idea that what federalism is.
Yeah.
Why we started this country with the bold idea that power should reside at the lowest possible level.
Perfect.
I mean, that's why I tell people this all the time when they complain about some dude that doesn't want to bake cake for gay people. I'm like, the right of association actually does more to prevent monopolies than any government regulation ever could. Because here's what happens. David Duke up there doesn't want to bake cakes for gay people. So somebody starts another company that bakes cakes for gay people. And now everybody's represented in cakes.
Yep.
Congratulations, you figured it out, man. Yep. That's how it's supposed to work.
Yep.
Not to take that asshole to court. And give him any fame or spotlight or anything like that. Plus, you don't have the right to force somebody. To compel action is to compel thought. And that's why people want to control speech so much now. Because thinking is speaking is thinking, right?
Yeah.
That's what it is, and it's thinking to someone else. So you're not only you're trying to control what's inside somebody's head, you're trying to control how people share ideas. That's the only reason censorship exists.
Yeah, and that's a precursor to real tyranny.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the real kind of tyranny that that would keep me a guy like me up at night, because if you're trying to control what I can or cannot say, then you're not far from getting to where you're going to control what I can or cannot think about.
Mm-hmm.
And that is yeah, this stuff I could say we could talk about. I could talk this for 10 years, but really, I guess it's important to acknowledge. People might say, "So what are we to do about it?"
Mm.
And my thing is, I'm going to continue to build cool shit that doesn't think about the government or doesn't consider the government, and I'm going to act. I'm going to be an actor who's going to push individual autonomy and responsibility and function down to the lowest level possible. And if I just keep doing that, that's one way that I can protest. I mean, I could never see myself being a politician. I think I'd get killed by like day two or three. But I also wouldn't want to open myself up to that in that way. It's just not the way I think, and I don't believe I'd be productive. But you know, I can vote in politicians that feel the way that I do if I can ever find them. But if I just keep building cool shit at the lowest level possible and empowering the individual, I think that's far more effective course of action for someone like me, in this culture war, this fight, whatever we want to call it. That's kind of my sense of things.
I mean, I think that's the best way to protest, frankly. Standing out in the street is pointless and annoying.
Yeah. Try to get to work
and get the fuck out of the way, because I'm going to run you over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You're in the way of a, you know, a big piece of metal flying down the street. That's not going to end well for you. I feel like we've reached the stage in human history where everybody knows that. So it's not on me to not hit that person. Right.
Yeah.
But my friend Andy Priscilla from First Form likes to say that personal excellence is the ultimate rebellion.
Beautiful.
And giving that to other people, I think, is really important, right? If you're running a business, I mean, that's what we try to do here, not with the booze company so much, because that doesn't make sense, but with our messaging, it's mostly about what the fuck are you doing, right? And here are some tools that might help you to improve what you're doing. I say this all the time, but if the government shows up and nobody's hands out, then they have no power there. So we're not going to vote our way out of this stuff. It's the government. Government power is kind of like Tinkerbell, man. Like, if enough people refuse to believe it exists, and it doesn't, frankly. I mean, that is a real thing. So, you know, I guess to put a bow on this, because we got to go do this other show in a sec, to put a bow on this, what are you out there doing? This is to the audience. What are you out there doing to pull yourself off of the government and public infrastructure tit? And I don't mean that in a derisive way. I mean, like, literally, the more people that remove themselves from that equation, the less effect that equation has on everybody collectively. You know what I mean? And then if you're an entrepreneur, what part of your mission statement is including that? You know what I mean? Like, where in your business are you finding opportunities to help people emancipate themselves from government intrusion? And it's not always possible with every business, maybe. But I do think it is, in a lot of ways, even just spending money on source material locally, for example, does that and make that part of your messaging, like, and talk about the companies you're buying from so more people will buy from them. There's a lot of opportunities to do this stuff. So I appreciate what you're doing. I'm actually a hunter. So I just think it's cool.
If
the world was perfect and government was perfect right now, it would still like this.
Yeah.
But it does have the added benefit of cajoling people to get the fuck out of this, go to the grocery store every day or whatever else, whatever other fucking feedback loops you're stuck in that are making it look like it's an insurmountable problem.
Right.
Because it's really not, to be honest.
Yeah.
So thanks for coming today. Appreciate the time. Tell everybody where they can find you and where they can find Spartan Forge.
Our website is www.spartanforge.ai. You can look us up on Instagram at Spartan Forge, Spartan.forge, or on Facebook. I spend about 3 hours a day I wake up first thing in the morning, usually between 5 and 8 a.m. I answer all of our social media and I interact with all of our customer problems. So if you have an issue with the app, or you have something you like about the app, or something you want to see, you're interacting with me. If you want to find out how you can support us, it's all there. And we do a lot of, we do veterans hunts every year, and we're trying to give back to the veteran community that I've benefited, as I said, so much from. And I'm really excited to hear from people, and thank you for having me on today.
Yeah, for sure. Anytime. And thank you all for listening. This has been Citizen.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.